Thank you so much, Chief Justice Christopher. And for those of you in the audience who are not familiar with how Texas rules of civil procedure get made, I'll tell you very briefly that the Texas Supreme Court has had broad rulemaking authority since the late 30s, and it's had a Supreme Court Advisory Committee in place since 1940. Chief Justice Christopher and I are on that Supreme Court Advisory Committee, and as its name suggests, that committee advises the court on rule-related matters. And like Chief Justice Christopher said, there is a request for the Supreme Court Advisory Committee to look at the jury rules to see whether they need to be modernized. And I think they do to a degree, and also to address remote proceedings. And for those of you who want to see the referral letter, it is included in your materials with the header Supreme Court of Texas. All right, moving on. I think that it's fair to say, despite the fact that some people don't love remote proceedings, they could become the new normal for certain types of cases. I think the question post-pandemic is, what exactly will those cases be? What are your respective thoughts on the types of cases that are suitable long-term for the remote context as opposed to in-person? We'll start with you, Quentin.
Thanks, Ken. Well, I think it's going to be a broad variety of civil cases. So your basic commercial disputes, as well as some family law disputes. I think it's more going to be the types of proceedings, like the type of hearings that are going to be virtual or remote. For example, a lot of hearings are short 5 to 10 minute hearings, where it's just a cattle call of lawyers, case called one after another. I believe that those types of hearings, motions will be perfect for remote proceedings, because you know it's easily accessible. And people can not have to spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours at the courthouse just for a simple motion to compel. Likewise, I think, as you mentioned, access to justice, family law proceedings, where it's just kind of a agreed divorce, but you still need to show up in court. I think those are going to be prime suspects for remote proceedings.
And you've done some work, Quentin, haven't you, with the Remote Proceedings Task Force focusing on those family law cases specifically? Have you gained any particular insights about those cases? You've shared a couple now, but anything more that you think would be helpful for the audience to know about why those types of cases for some proceedings may be good for remote context?
Yeah, well, what we've learned from the various judges that do family law proceedings is that they have seen increased participation in those types of proceedings. People that normally may not show up to court or can't get off from their job to show up to court at a particular time are now showing up because it's easy to do. They can just dial in from their cell phone and appear in front of the judge. And so so increased participation is one thing. In addition, talking about some of the rural counties where judges might sit in multiple counties, and instead of having to literally travel to each county to hold hearings, the judge can hold hearings in one place and get through a lot more of his or her docket instead of actually having to move around.
That makes a lot of sense. And Chief Justice Christopher, do you have any thoughts in addition to what Quentin has shared in terms of types of proceedings that may be particularly well-suited for the remote realm?
Well, you know, appellate arguments are pretty good in the remote realm. So, you know, we've been just chipping along with our appellate arguments, and you know, some people like it, some people don't. Certainly, to save money, to save time, we are glad to have an oral argument remotely. I also think a lot of bench trials are very well suited to remote proceedings. Now, you know, probably not a real complicated one with lots and lots of witnesses and lots of evidence, although I think they've managed to do that even during the pandemic. But especially evictions, a small breach of contract, you know, cases that are in JP court or county court that are the smaller ones, that people can just get it done. And they don't have to come down to the courthouse. And I think it is a big cost savings. I got a lot of emails from people being the chair of this task force about, you know, please do it, please don't do it. You know, and I'm like, well, that's not my job. You know, I'm just gathering evidence at this point. And but I did have one lawyer who was in a remote part of the state. And for him, he was able to take cases all around the state much more inexpensively. And, you know, that was just a big factor for him in terms of being able to take a case. Because if he always had to drive 2 hours to get to a hearing on a case and the case was small, it wasn't going to be worth the client's time and money for him to do it, or if he was on a contingent fee for him to do it. So I think there'll be, if the judges are willing and the lawyers are willing, I think this will be used a lot in the future.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'll say that I've done a lot of depositions remotely, and I have found that it saves a lot of time and therefore money for my clients, because I would normally be traveling to and from wherever the deposition occurs. And I haven't done the math, but I've probably had about 20 plus depositions remotely during the pandemic. And for each deposition, I think about 4 hours of time has been saved that would otherwise be spent in the car. So I think that it could be great for certain types of depositions. Quentin, I don't know if you've also handled depositions remotely and have had a similar experience or a different one.